great feel for every pitch. He's thrown every pitch in this inning that he has.
He struck out the side. You can't do it any better. Good start, Snell and Rays up one after one in game six.
It's a Twins Tuesday on Mackey and Judd. Did the Twins let one get away? Did they have a shot to land an ace-caliber starting pitcher, even better than Kenta Maeda, and they let it slip away? We'll talk about that. Plus, the Vikings not fired. They declined to renew the contract of somebody that we saw this coming with. And all kinds of other things today on Mackey and Judd. Quick shout out to Federated Insurance. As a business owner, how helpful would it be for you to have employee training at your fingertips? Industry resources that can help your business reach another level of success? Well, that's why Federated Mutual Insurance Company recently launched MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources. Think about these questions. Do your employees use ladders? How would a fall impact that employee's livelihood? I can't even really see Judd on a ladder, but...
I stay away from ladders as much as possible, Phil.
My shield would be a good thing for Dawn to have if Judd's
she would
on a ladder.
Be, yes, yes, that's exactly right.
My shield has resources to help your business with all sorts of issues and things and risk management related items. You can go to federatedinsurance.com to find out more information and just click on the My Shield link. And you can also talk to your Federated marketing representative, too, if you just want to have a discussion. And remember, at Federated Insurance, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackey and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Again, this is 24 hours after the game or whatever it is, so I have to take some time to evaluate who's available, who's not available, guys here in the building, and we'll go from there. We'll do it like we always do.
That was Mike Zimmer when he was asked about replacing special teams coordinator Marwin Maloof, who was on a two-year contract. The contract was set to expire.
It was only 2 years too long.
And Mike Zimmer, in the least shocking news of all time, decided not to renew the contract of his special teams coordinator. What's your favorite Marwin Maloof memory, Judd?
Oh, boy, where do we start? Kickers struggling? No, let's not start there. Let's start with punt returners not returning the football.
I think the successful fake punt where Chris Boyd was so excited and jumping up and down.
I'm trying to think of ones where I blame Magoof, though. Because, I mean, Chris Boyd screwed that play up entirely. But there's plenty to go around here. Certainly, there's a chance that recency bias is in play here. But I challenge anyone to give me a year where Viking special teams was this bad overall.
Yeah, I mean,
because like we've had missed kicks before, we've had bad snaps before, but everything was, for the most part, poor.
I feel like in general, if you take away, like, kicking has been a problem off and on for essentially like 20 years, right? Like ever since Gary Anderson missed a field goal in the 98 championship game, then you had just like random kickers that could come in for a couple of years. Was it Doug Bryan that missed a couple extra, like the old extra
Joe
points?
Joe Setzer, get the hell out. Yeah.
Got fired or released right after the game was over. So if you take away the kicks, I can't remember a season in which there were this many non-kicking special teams gaffes. It kind of feels like the Vikings have been pretty solid. Like they've always had Marcus Sherrills back there or like a Cordero Patterson returning kicks. Or even like in the Bobby Wade days where they would just put a reliable guy back there to make a fair catch sign as the ball is hitting its peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't remember special teams ever being just this much of a disaster. It's also really hard to parse apart blame. Like, is it Marwin Maloof's fault that all these things happened? I don't know. But when 15 different things happen across like four different areas of special teams, I think you probably have to take a look at the guy who's organizing those four things and you have to move on and make a change. So
yeah,
hopefully Marwin finds out.
I am actually shocked he survived the entire season.
Do you think Zimmer is showing some self-awareness in that, like, whether it's with Dan Bailey or Marwin Maloof, guys that maybe 5 years ago Mike Zimmer would have just moved on from in week 8 or week 10?
You know what he might be doing?
Is he self-aware in that, I've fired a couple coordinators midseason.
Yeah. He might finally have gotten the clue, too, that when he does that stuff, it's definitely a reflection on him, right? So, yes, he might be saying, if I fire this guy, I sort of hired this guy. So I look bad. Yeah, you know what? But still, there were enough debacles where I thought, this guy's got no chance. Like, Zim is is going to go home after a loss, have three glasses of wine, and call this guy up and just fire him.
Is Mike Zimmer the least obvious red wine guy in the history of red wine guys?
God.
Because when you look at Mike Zimmer and you think, all right, rank the alcohol that that guy probably enjoys after a football game. You'd start with the brown stuff.
Yep.
Then you'd probably move on, like a couple of beers. Like he's got a little bit of a beer gut, right?
I can see that.
Yeah,
I don't know, I don't know that I'd get to red wine on my list of things I would assume Mike Zimmer drinks after a football game.
He seems like he would love a Miller Lite. This absolute pound Miller Lite.
He looks like he would, but he probably doesn't. So, yeah. Yeah, I would say the brown stuff to me would definitely be, I could see Zim at his desk post-game and stuff just pounding that. But, yeah, no, he's a wine connoisseur.
Yeah. We'll do
which
it.
Which is not a good drunk, by the way.
I actually enjoy red wine.
That's a no. I'm just saying.
I feel a lot healthier when I drink red wine.
I can't.
That's good, but wine is a terrible drunk. Oh, yeah. That's the worst.
We don't have
drunk.
To drink nine glasses. Well, just like have a glass before bed.
That's why I don't drink wine.
Yeah, I can't do it. It's the one alcohol I just stay away from.
I just
specifically.
I
love alcohol. So
yes, that's been well established.
I almost feel nothing like you that. Have to be at least 30 years old before you start to appreciate red wine.
Okay.
So you still got a couple more years.
Wine, coffee.
I loved coffee at a very I liked coffee like at 13,
I did
14.
Too. Lots,
what?
Lots
yeah, you
of
drank
people
coffee
don't.
As a teenager?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I had the earliest bus stop in my entire high school. The earliest, because I live in the east side of St. Paul, and my high school is on Central over here.
So you're like in sixth grade just pounding black coffee before catching the yellow school bus?
I was 14 going in
smoking up,
grade.
Ripping a heater.
Smoking at the bus corner.
Marbred and a Folgers cup
off
of coffee.
School. I'm going to be late for school. Where's my damn mug of coffee? Where's my Folgers?
Now that I'm like into my mid-30s here, red wine and green tea are my two best friends. And 10 years ago, I've never been a coffee guy, but 10 years ago, it was like energy drinks and beer. Like popping like 5-hour energies before radio shows. And when Judd and I first started doing a 4-hour radio show.
That's bad for the heart.
It's like 7 years ago. We first started doing a 4-hour radio show. And I had done 2 and I had done 3. I think you had been doing a 4-hour show for a little while before me. I think you and Dubé.
Yeah, Dubé and I started the 4-hour show. I'd like to apologize for that because you got swept into it.
And I remember thinking like after the first couple shows, holy cow, like that fourth hour is just kind of mentally draining if you've never done it before. And so you go take a nap. And so on like the third day, I was like, God, it's like Wednesday and I'm already just tired and dragging. And the vending machine downstairs here in our building used to have 5-hour energy.
It did?
So you'd have like Funyuns and Doritos and
really?
Nutter Butter bars and Snickers. And then there was a 5-hour energy section of
it's like, the I didn't vending know that. Machine.
It was like $2 a pop.
Oh my God.
And so for 3 weeks, I would go down there every day. I would pay $2 before the show, and I would grab a 5-hour energy, and I would down it just to be like, ready to rock. God. Let's do this. Woo!
And then you'd crash again.
But then I realized I started to do some math. Like, okay. Well, I started to do some math, and I started to do a self-health evaluation of, so $2 a day, and we're going to do like 200-plus shows a year. So am I going to spend $500 a year on 5-hour energy?
Not to mention your heart.
And then that was the second thing.
Like pumping out of your chest.
I started to get like heart palpitations.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I got to go to the hospital after today's show. Why? Oh, I just had my 6th Red Bull of the day.
Well, when you go from having no energy drinks or coffee or anything to just having like a 5-hour energy every day for
you gotta do coffee
3 weeks or something. So I switched to green tea, and then I would drink like 5 green teas during a show.
When I would fill in for Harrigan, there'd be day I just wouldn't go to bed because I had to be here so early, and I'm such a night owl that like there I just wouldn't go to sleep, and then I would come home and take like a killer nap from like 2 to 9 p.m. Wow. I'm dead serious.
I can't do that one.
Yeah,
wow. I have to sleep. I've in the course of my life, when I was actually gonna try in college briefly. I think I tried to pull an all-nighter once or twice, and it was just a disaster. I can't do it. I cannot. I am the person that cannot stay up all night. I will fall asleep.
The only all-nighters I pulled in college were, like, if I was procrastinating by playing NBA Live for Xbox and, like, online poker, and I realized at 2 o'clock in the morning, oh, I still have a paper I have to write, so better clear the runway.
God.
Hand that thing in.
So you stay up all night and do it?
I did it, like, 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Ooh. I once actually did that at the, I think it was the end of my senior year, and I had kind of figured out like how to procrastinate well, and I had like a 15 or one of those like 15, 20 page term papers that it was like a whole semester project, and it was literally due the next day, and I hadn't started it yet. It was within 24 hours. And so my roommate was in the same class. So we just like, we alternated 30-minute game of NBA Live on Xbox, then go right for like an hour, 30-minute game on Xbox, right for an hour.
Wow.
We turned the papers in at 8 in the morning, went and got breakfast at the old Cafe 421, which is closed forever. One of the sad, the 100 restaurants that have
closed. Another great restaurant that closed because of COVID.
Yep. So, anyways, Marwan Maalouf, grab a glass of red wine. Enjoy your off-season. On the paper, I don't remember, but it wasn't terrible.
Great. It wasn't terrible.
It was like a B or something.
Oh, that's pretty good.
No, I was a B plus.
Yeah, don't bury the lead to the story here. How'd you do?
Listen, there's a lot of things I'm not good at in life. I was great at doing, like figuring out what the minimum amount of attention and work in college was.
Yes.
But getting the maximum output.
Oh, I wasn't the latter of that, but.
Okay.
But at the first part, I was.
Declan was like, yeah, me too. Oh, too. No, like, no.
Wait, C plus.
I didn't do that at all.
Like, I wanted to learn.
C minus for me.
I wanted to get good enough grades, but the level of work needed to get like a B or a B minus in a college class versus like an A or an A plus is a canyon wide. And I was more interested in spending, like I was good with the B minus and then use the time to do other things. Play online poker mostly. Anyways,
The Vikings of college.
Yeah.
Just good enough to get by.
Not going to flunk.
Never a disaster, but you never won a championship.
Nope. Wasn't going to.
That's what you were. You were the Vikings.
Wasn't going to be class president.
Hey, guys, we just need to be good enough to be good, but we don't have to be great.
Yep. We're not going to be a train wreck. We're not going to get kicked out or expelled or anything like that. Yep. Anyhow.
And I was the best.
We're
going to
win, Twins. We're going to score. We're going to win, Twins. What's that baseball score?
A question for you guys here.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions. Did you guys already talk about the Ian Snell trade to our Ian Snell? He's the crappy pitcher from the Pirates. I always do that.
The Blake Snell.
Blake
trade.
Snell's the better Snell. The Blake Snell trade to the Padres.
I think we touched on it briefly.
Very briefly.
I think.
With Patrick, I think we did.
Okay.
Yep.
So Twins Tuesday here, and the Twins haven't given us a whole lot to speculate on this offseason because baseball doesn't know which direction it's going or when the season's going to start or any of those things.
This is incredible, by the way.
But there's already some moves being made. The Twins are still waiting on Nelson Cruz, so other teams are making some moves, but it's a classic baseball offseason where, like, one move gets made, and then, like, 4 weeks later, another move gets made.
And we still don't know the rules.
No, we don't know if there's going to be a DH.
We don't know the rules.
Or if there's going to be a runner on second base and extra innings. We don't know if the schedule is going to be played, you know, starting in April or whatever. Like, we have no idea. But we do know that the San Diego Padres have been one of the most aggressive, and by the way, mid-market teams. Like, the San Diego Padres are sort of a Twins equivalent in terms of revenue and market size. It's not New York. It's close to L.A., but they're not getting they're far enough away from L.A. where they're not getting, like, the L.A. TV market money and just the all the fruits that, like, the Dodgers get, right? So when I see the Yankees make a trade for a big pitcher or the Dodgers make a trade for a big pitcher or the Red Sox or the Phillies, it's hard to make a direct comparison to the Twins because those teams have more financial resources and they can sort of burn and churn through more mistakes. But when I see a team like the Padres make a big trade, it's an immediate equivalent to what the Twins could do. And so the trade was Blake Snell, 28 years old, former Cy Young Award winner, 3 years, $40 million left, so very reasonable contract. The Padres get him. The Rays get four really good young players. So Luis Patino was the Padres' second-best pitching prospect. Francisco Mejia, 2 years ago, Francisco Mejia, I think he was with the Indians 2 years ago.
Yeah, he was big-time catcher at that time.
He was the number five overall prospect in all of baseball 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of fallen back, but he's only 24 years old. And there's still a lot of potential there. Blake Hunt, got to be careful the way I say that. Blake Hunt is a 22-year-old catcher, top 100-ish prospect potential. And Cole Wilcox was a third-round pick, drafted last year, pitcher, I think, out of Georgia. Has not played in the minors yet. So basically, four really good young players. A couple of them are major league ready. The Rays clearly wanted a catcher and like a top pitching prospect. So here is the Twins equivalent as I see it. Would you make this trade for 3 years of Blake Snell? And I should probably hit the right sound here because we're now venturing into
reckless speculation.
Retrospective reckless speculation.
What could have been, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Blake Snell, again, former Cy Young Award winner, one of the best pitchers in baseball in his prime, 3 years, $40 million, very reasonable. Would you give up Yoan Duran, mm-hmm. Twins' second-best pitching prospect, Ryan Jeffers, because they want a catcher, so you probably have to give up Ryan Jeffers, and let's say Royce Lewis. I'm gonna put three guys on the table.
Royce Lewis.
No, that's more, dude. No. The Padres gave up a flat out top prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through the MLB.com rankings, and the other three guys don't even crack the top 100 for those. Wilcox is the eighth ranked prospect now, just flat out in the Rays organization. Blake Hunt is the 24th ranked prospect in the Rays organization, and Mejia has fallen out. So I think you take Lewis out unless he is the lone superstar.
Okay, so what would the let's just build the equivalent here. So
Jeffers is probably fair.
Yep.
So Jeffers, Duran
is probably very fair.
And then two guys that are sort of out of like the top ten.
Yes, two prospects that the Twins probably liked but didn't love, and that baseball does not love.
And so my question then would be, why wouldn't the Twins have traded for Blake Snell, or did they try?
Well, here's my question.
Would it have taken
a
Royce Lewis to get over the Padres package?
Do we think that the Rays, I'll give them credit, are ordinarily very smart, and they've done a great job considering their ballpark and all of the problems that they have when it comes to generating revenue. Did the Rays do their true due diligence here? Like, I saw that trade and my first thought was, okay, that's not I get the return, but off your point, I got to think somebody else would have at least competed with what the Padres offer was, and maybe to a certain point topped it.
So part of the reason why I put Royce Lewis on this list is because of what Francisco Mejia was regarded as a couple years ago. Mm. He was like a Royce Lewis level prospect 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's, for whatever reason, like sometimes what happens is a guy is a top prospect and then they come up to the big leagues. Aaron Hicks is a classic example. He's a top prospect. They get a cup of coffee in the big leagues and it goes horribly. That's what happened with Francisco Mejia. He was just like unplayably bad in the major leagues. And then they go back to the minor leagues and they kind of sputter for a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then people write them off and they drop out of the prospect list. And it doesn't mean that they're not going to eventually figure it out. Like Mike Trout was terrible his first year in the major leagues. So I think the Rays are looking at this and saying, ooh, we can buy low on Francisco Mejia, who 2 years ago was like one of the surefire top prospects in all of baseball.
Yep.
I think Patino is their replacement for Blake Snell. They probably think he's just going to jump in and be a stud pitcher if they can mold him. I look at this and I think, man, even if Royce Lewis was included, let's say, it's the type of deal that I think the Twins should consider because Blake Snell probably puts them over the top.
Mm-hmm.
If they're looking to win a playoff game in 2021, which should be the main goal to start with, but then a playoff series and a World Series. So, I don't know. Like, why can't you top this and get Blake Snell? Are they in the discussion for guys like Blake Snell? Because it's a lot cheaper in terms of finances if you're looking to also sign Nelson Cruz to trade for Blake Snell at $13 million a year and then re-sign Cruz, and now you're really in the mix. The White Sox are getting better. Teams like the Padres are getting better. Why is it that the Padres, another mid-market team,
who then
pop up with a bunch of young players and then immediately add to get over the top? Why did the White Sox add?
Go get the next day Yu Darvish, too.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. The next day, I think. The Snell trade to me, though, is the type of trade where the Twins and teams like the Twins who are smart and aggressive had a great chance here. Because this Padres deal for the Rays is probably a nice return with one top prospect, but I really think it could have been topped. And I'm not even talking throwing Royce in. I'm talking about just topping it with prospects that are considered to be marginally better than some of the bottom prospects that the Padres sent to Tampa, right?
Yeah, I think this.
I am a little bit surprised.
I know that this was a problem with the Terry Ryan front offices. And I wonder if it's also a problem with the Derek Falvey, Thad Levine front offices and therefore, pull out ownership. When the Twins traditionally look at their prospects, they see, a top 10 list. They see Yohan Duran and they see Trevor Larnach and Alex Kirilloff, and they see the best version of those prospects. Boy, if Larnach pans out, he could be Michael Kadire or whatever. If Royce Lewis pans out, he could be Derek Jeter, right? They look at the 90th percentile of each of those top 10 prospects. And the reality is, any snapshot in any year of a top 10 list of Twins prospects includes three or four guys that never made it at all. It includes another like two or three guys that became big leaguers, but like in retrospect, Jason Bartlett was like the third best prospect for the Twins at one point. And Jason Kubel was like the number one prospect. And at the time, you know, 15 years ago, when, if you remember these discussions, the Twins were looking for a big thumper bat and like Alfonso Soriano was available. And what would you have to give up? Boy, they want Matt Garza and Jason Kubel. And it's like at the time you're like, whoa, you can't give up those guys. Well, in retrospect, would you have taken an Alfonso Soriano in his prime for one of those division championship teams for a Matt Garza? Like 100%.
Right.
So I guess, you know, is there a chance that you could trade Yohan Duran and he turns out to be, you know, a number one starter for a World Series team in Tampa Bay at some point? Absolutely. But I think you have to stop looking at your prospects as if all of them are going to pan out to their 90th percentile abilities.
And plus they flat out are currency. Like the thing that I would love to know among teams, and this includes the Twins, Vikings, teams like that, that are often very competent and good. What do you perceive your window as being as? Like, do the Twins look at themselves right now and think, we are on the come, but I mean, we've got these prospects and in 3 years, we're going to be great. Do they think, no, we've made the playoffs two consecutive years. We have not won a playoff game and we've lost 18 consecutive playoff games. What do they perceive themselves to be as far as the window of opportunity to win? Because if you sat down right now and thought, been to the playoffs, have a solid team, yes, there's prospects coming up, but you also have some damn good players right now, and you're going to add Blake Snell, Phil? I mean, that goes a long way towards saying, this rotation now looks really, really solid. Really solid.
Yeah, so you would have...
And has a top-line starter, I think.
You would have had Blake Snell. You would have had Maeda probably as your number
Kenta
two.
Maeda, yes.
Barrios as a three.
Yep.
Pineda's still in the rotation, right?
Yes.
And then figured out for the five spot. I mean, maybe that's where, like, Jordan Balazovic comes in and he's your number five starter. Something like that.
But, I mean, that's a incredibly solid top three.
And instead of... If it's Jefferson Duran, would you be willing... Because the Rays have been interested in him before, would you also be willing to throw on Kepler? Because Kepler's major league ready and ready to go and establish on a team-friendly deal that the Rays would love.
See, all right, I feel like the Rays love Kepler, as you said. Kepler has like 4 years or something left on his contract, or five or something like that.
He has a very team-friendly deal.
Now, Blake Snell is two, though. Better at his position than Max Kepler is at his position. So, yeah, I think a fair deal, if they would have been interested, would have been like Max Kepler plus either Duran or Jeffers and something less, right?
I don't think the Rays... And they are weird. I don't think with the way that they operated with this trade that they wanted major league talent back at all.
Well, even like when you look at the Archer trade.
Or contract, I should say. I'm sorry.
I mean, they got back Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows. I mean, that's a pretty good trade for Chris Archer at the time. Because Archer was coming off a down season, even though he was a 2 years removed from a Cy Young year. But like Glasnow is their ace. Like that's their number one guy. When they traded David Price 5-6 years ago, they actually kind of botched that one. It was a three-team trade, and all the Rays got back was Drew Smyly, Willie Adams, and Nick Franklin. So, like, they kind of botched that one.
Actually, Willie Adames, I believe, and I think he's their starting shortstop now.
Is he? Okay. Yes,
he hit like 20 bombs.
But they
definitely like to get kids back who are still prospects.
But Glasnow and Meadows are, like, they got that one right. I don't know. I trust, like, the Rays do know scouting, so they might know things about the guys that they received from Snell that probably we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why they keep winning 90 games and like the reason why they've been to two World Series in the last 12 years and the Twins literally can't win a playoff. The Rays have been to the World Series twice in the same time span as the Twins have since they've won a playoff game. And you have to go back even further.
But the Twins currently now, and it's to their credit as far as what they've developed in their system, the Twins are set up to compete to make trades exactly like this.
So what stops them?
I don't know. But
what stops them from trading Trevor Larnach? This is the problem. Like,
I mean, I think I know. But
this is why the Twins.
I think you know.
The Twins win divisions and the Twins are competitive, but the Twins don't win World Series because what happens is, and I'll give you a real world example. 2 years ago, Yankee Stadium, And now the guy that they ran out there for game three, Randy Dobnak, was not a top prospect that would be like luring a Blake Snell in a trade. So it's a little bit apples to oranges. But in game three of a playoff game against the vaunted Yankees lineup, the Twins are relying on a prospect to sort of break out for the first time, right, on that stage in game three, as opposed to using prospects like that to trade for players that can handle that moment. When the Twins roll in and they need like Cody Stashek to come out of the bullpen for the first time against, you know, the middle of the Astros lineup, why don't you have an established player in that spot? Like, what, why aren't you making moves, especially for 2021 with Josh Donaldson on the roster? Like, you're ready to win now. Don't hoard your prospects when you're ready to win.
When
now.
You're starting Randy Dobnak in a playoff game, to me, though, you are sending a clear message, whether you mean to or not, that you are not prepared really to compete for a championship.
Yeah, which is funny because like, the didn't they win 103 games or something that year too?
Yep.
And you're running out, like, you know, respect your own success. Like,
but that's what I'm saying is that's what I want to know what the people who run the team, where they think they are as far as the actual competitive window to win a World Series.
Yeah.
Forget a playoff berth, forget a division title, forget all of that, okay? What is your, because if you said right now, hey, look, okay, Cruz is probably going to come back because the league can't make up its damn mind about the rules. This team is going to be very solid again. If you said that, and I gave you an opportunity to trade for Blake Snell, and yes, it's prospects, and yes, there's probably one who you hate to part with, but you would say, hold on a second here. So I'm getting a team control pitcher who I can put basically at the top of my rotation with a team that I think is pretty much prepared to pop. You know what? I have to make that trade.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think you're right about your premise of why they don't make that trade. But that, to me, that's also what goes back to what holds you back from being good and great.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The offseason still has a lot of time left, but it kind of feels like the plan
actually does. It's not supposed to.
Well, they're going to have at least 2 months. I don't think spring training's going to start.
I think
they want vaccines before they.
Yeah.
I think you're right, but it's hilarious that they don't tell us anything.
Well, they don't know. Like, they don't know what to tell us because they haven't met about anything yet.
But just tell us that you're going to at least back up spring training a little bit. I mean, right now they're still trying to say February 19th. Everyone reports.
Baseball
right?
is so dumb. Like 2020, and this is my favorite sport. Like I think all of us, it's one of our favorite sports. And yeah. like 2020 was the year for baseball to say, all right, we're going to start playing. It's a socially distant sport. We're going to start playing in May. We're going to go like they waited 2 months and argued publicly about money, and you know. Billions of dollars of pie and how is it going to be divided? And then the offseason hits and it's like, all right, let's get it. We got some big time moves that might be made, a couple big free agents out there. And they can't figure out a way to make their sport exciting when it matters. And that's what's really frustrating.
So Dex, my question to you is very simple. Why do you still care about baseball? Like I'm old. Phil is old enough mm-hmm. that I don't see him giving up his investment in the sport itself, but you're what, 28 now?
Yep.
Like how close are you to just punting? Cause you're young enough to be like, I can't watch the games now because you know, Fox Sports North is not on my service. The sport literally can't make up its mind about its rules. I would think people your age have to be close to saying, screw it. I'll just do something else.
I think I'm a little biased. Cause like the Twins were the first team that I ever gravitated towards growing up. So like I became a sports fan around like 2001, around 9/11. That was like the first World Series I remember. Obviously the Yankees and Diamondbacks, and then to be honest, best time to become a Twins fan was literally then.
Yeah.
So that made things easier. I don't know. I hear every gripe from people who are my age that can't stand Major League Baseball and think it's boring. And I hear it. I still love baseball. So until like the ineptitude reaches something, which is it could get there pretty quickly here. I can't see myself not watching baseball. I absolutely love it. I've worked in baseball. I've covered baseball. It's right up there with hockey with me, with 1A and 1B.
Okay.
So I think it'd be tough for me just to walk away from it. They'd have to do something very, very drastic.
I have not walked away from it, but I am not like actively obsessing over it like I used to. I mean, 10 years ago, as soon as Thanksgiving hit, I was on MLB Trade Rumors every single day, just like refreshing any news nugget. And now there are no news nuggets. Like once every 3 weeks, there's a news nugget. Oh, Blake Snell got traded. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Twins weren't involved. So anyhow, let's pause quick. And I think our guy Randy in Cottage Grove is fired up.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if he's got a stud stable or for a win over Detroit.
I bet he's calling for a lot of jobs today.
I hope he's planning for the future.
I think he's calling for Zim's job right now.
Well, we'll find out. Also, we're gonna roll out a series of Dex reviews, starting with quarterback prospects that we think the Vikings should at least be kicking the tires on. Are we doing Kyle Trask today?
Yep, Kyle Trask.
All right, so we'll do that.
Got a whole story.
You think you and your Hall of Fame quarterback buddy like football? Well, John Gruden and Brett Favre don't just like football. They f***ing love it.
Watch this throw rolling to my left, backing up.
That's awesome, man.
And I make another throw the next
time. It's like it came right out of heaven.
I mean, it had to drop in like a butterfly with sore feet. It had to drop in like that.
Like a what?
Football!
Football, yeah!
Football!
Football!
Get some!
Gotta eat!
To evaluate the players, that's the first thing. Evaluate all the players in the program and kind of decide which ones are developmental, which ones that we can win with, which ones are going to, you know, move forward with. I think that'll be the number one thing. And then once we get there, then we'll start evaluating systems and plays. And, you know, obviously if there's some coaching things, that'll be high on the list. So, you know, just normal stuff.
That's Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer talking about his offseason checklist, the things that he needs to look at, account for, who's going to move forward with the team. Marwin Maloof will not be moving forward. Randy in Cottage Grove. How was your Christmas, Randy? Happy New Year.
Yeah, good. Yeah, great. You know, this is my was my first you know, Christmas alone, you know, which was a it was fine, you know, just not with my former. They had a little friend by the name of Phillips, Peppermint Schnapps, and you can load up cocoa. You can load up with eggnog. I mostly do brandy, but I really did enjoy Peppermint Schnapps this year for the first time in a while. I revisited it. It's great.
You know, it's been a while. I don't know if I
would
can't remember the last
that
time
would
I had
not
peppermint
be great
schnapps.
For me. That would be a.
I dove into some peppermint schnapps.
Tastes like a sort of like a mint chip ice cream, but hot.
It's good.
See, I thought you were having some success in the was it the online date? I can't remember. You went on a blind date or something like
a couple,
3 weeks ago.
Three of them now.
And none of them panned out enough to meet up over the holidays.
No, I'm not a kiss and tell, but. We just didn't meet up, you know, on the actual holiday. A couple of the gals do have offspring, and I, of course, I don't. But they said it's not maybe not the right time to introduce older Andy, and that's fine. We'll get there. But just gave an opportunity to kind of sit back, kind of watch a little pigskin, take a look at the season, the way it shook out, and I was jolly. I was in a jolly mood, and. You know, I wasn't so jolly though with that victory Sunday. That was needless. You know, I sort of saw the light as far as, you know, you're going to start 1-5. You better finish 10-6, and they didn't. They crapped the bed, as they say. And I was salty. I was a little salty coming into the new year, but you know, I thought, you know, Randy, you know, knock your head around a little bit and try to put yourself in their shoes, you know, and they, I've called for some heads this year. I mean, I have, you know, you guys know that. And, the way I see it now is they got some cards they've been dealt, you know, barring some common sense over there that they ain't going to draft a QB in the first round. Let's be honest about it. You know, they'll probably find a way to say, oh, the guys we like, we're off the board. We're going to have to run it back, as they say, with Cousins. And I thought, you know, I can't go a whole year and a half being negative about that. Let's try to figure out a way to kind of win with the cards in our hand.
Yeah. Hey, that's a great attitude. There's too much negativity around here.
I like it, Randy.
Yeah.
too much negativity, and I think the fact that you're bringing a bright, positive attitude.
Who have you become, Randy? 2 weeks ago, you were calling for Zim's head on Twitter. I like that, Randy, more.
Well, believe me, if I was running the show, the whole blueprint's different. But I'm not, I'm a realism kind of a guy. And if they ain't gonna give Zim the axe, you know, and they ain't gonna go hire like a Benenemy or a Byron Leftwich or you know, I would even give a flyer to you know, someone, you know, like a Josh McDaniels. You know, I'd give him another shot.
I thought,
you know,
Josh McDaniels did great offensively this year up in New England. I don't think people appreciated his offensive brilliance.
Well, he didn't have the horses.
Judd, didn't they interview him like 5-6 years ago, McDaniels? I thought I remember there was maybe a time where
they tried to, I think, and I think he might have turned him down.
Got it. Okay.
Remember but the time where he got hired by the Colts and hired a whole staff and then was like, I'm out.
A couple of years ago, yeah. Yes.
And then all those guys had like been replaced at their old jobs.
Look at Phil laugh.
It's hilarious.
He's got the pedigree. Simple. You know, you guys make fun, but he's got he does have the pedigree. And I was interested to see Elway stepping down in Denver. I don't think we're going to make a move on Zim, but you know, Vic Fangio, kind of a guy who, if he ever hits the streets, look out, because he has some aces up his sleeve. And I, speaking of kind of looking to people with a track record, one of the things I think they could do, and you know, Rick, if you're listening, this is, you can have these ideas as just sort of a jumping off point, but you know, kind of look to the past and say, let's find some teams that. You know, really made it happen with the pieces they had. You know, didn't go out and get some marquee sort of a, you know, free agent wide out or whatnot. And
yeah, I think there's some great recent examples that you should definitely look at for sure. I mean, the NFL is.
You want to have a little fun with this? We could do it as just kind of with the stud stable music, and I could take you through.
Oh, sure,
I like
some
it.
Yeah, it's your show. Yep,
it's great. Think about the innovation in the NFL these days, and just the blueprint that the Vikings could look at. I'm excited for this, man. Let's do this. So this is Randy's offseason blueprint stable, I guess?
Yeah, this is, you know, if we're going to run it back, there's definitely some innovation, kind of innovative offenses we can look at.
Yep, let's innovate. Let's do this. Innovate!
These are going to be studs of the future.
So here, I looked at a little bit of tape of some, you know, similar sort of personnel groupings that kind of got a little bit more creative than I think Gary was willing to do this year, Gary. So let's start with, you know, Warren Moon got a lot of the glory for the Oilers in 90. But, you know, you guys remember the way that they used those four receivers. I mean, Curtis Duncan, Haywood Jeffries, Drew Hill.
What?
Ernie Givens. I mean, all of those guys, they were all little. You know, they weren't
Ernest
big,
Givens?
They weren't big, tall guys.
Like 30 years ago.
Excuse me? They weren't big, tall guys, but they put up almost 60 on the Browns. And the game I broke down, they could really, really spread it. And Kirk can make those throws. I mean, I watched this tape and Warren.
Where'd you find this tape, Randy?
Were you watching Tecmo Super Bowl? Yeah. What the hell were you?
You break out your VCR?
I have it. People who are into this have it, and you can. There's swap meets. You can swap.
Declan goes to some swap meets.
Yeah, I go to some swap meets here and there.
I think you went to some swap meets too back in your day, Randy.
Yeah,
this might be why the marriage ended.
Well, that's a separate conversation. But here, this one I had to track down a tape of, but I kind of remembered. I had a kind of an inkling that Washington, kind of in 83, they really did some things with. The way they used Alvin Garrett and then Charlie Brown, kind of opposite of Art Monk, it was really kind of interesting to see.
What? Are we talking the Peanuts?
He grabbed it. Excuse me?
You say Charlie Brown?
Yeah. But
like the Peanuts?
Receiver.
No, he's a player.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Peanuts.
No, he's an actual player.
What team are we talking about?
Yeah. That's the 83 Washington. And then another one that you want to go a little more recent.
Art Monk's like 70.
The 84 Dolphins, you know, Marino got a lot of credit for that squad. But, you know, the way that they moved Mark Duper around in different looks, and I mean, they kind of moved him. The game I watched, they had Duper one time he was wide, another time he was in the slot, you know. And you guys remember Mark Duper.
I mean,
He was the kind of guy who could, you know, those are the unsung heroes. Without that kind of a scheme to, you know, to move around a duper, you know, maybe we don't know the name Dan Marino, you know, and so Kirk, you know, if we're going to be paying him the big scratch, we got to spread it out, you know, spread it out and maybe a little bit of run and shoot. You know, I was really, really jazzed watching the Oilers and thinking, you know, we have this personnel. It's all on the roster.
Do you have something for the last 20 years, Randy, that could be that maybe the Vikings could use?
Literally anything from the 2000s.
What's the difference? I mean, it's football. It's all football.
And the run and shoot got figured out a while ago.
No, the X's and O's, as far as I can tell, there's still 11 guys on each side of the line, no?
Football.
Well, sometimes 12 if you're the Vikings, but that's another subject.
If you guys are going to, you know, going to kind of, you know, jock around some ideas, that's what I'm trying to help do. And you know, I don't know, but maybe you don't. But when I watch these games, I got snuck, and it made me think about...
Hey, Randy. You know, Randy, tell me about the 61 Packers. Like, are there things from the 61 Packers the Vikings can borrow?
That's old ground and pound. I'm talking about modern, you know, kind of air it out, spread it around, you know, spread it and get Delvin out in space. You know, they could use Delvin the way the Dolphins used Duper. Mark Duper and moved him all over. Moved Delvin all over. I mean, if you want to make, you know, make a, you know, cake out of the crap they got laying on the counter, there are recipes, okay? So if look at them. Just look at the examples. I had seven more, but you don't get them now.
Oh, what?
You know, sometimes when he gets mad at us and hangs up, I think to myself, I would have liked to heard the rest of that list today.
You're good.
I'm okay with
it. You're good with just stopping at the 83 Washington team?
You didn't even mention Clayton.
You know what?
You mentioned Duper, you got to mention Clayton.
I think you're being too hard on Randy. When I think about the things the Vikings need to accomplish this offseason, looking at John Riggins' film from the early 80s. That's right. All right, everyone. We're going to take a bar off your helmet, and we're going to tape up your hands, no gloves. And you're just going to be bleeding for 3 hours as we go for 3.5 yards a carry. Ah. The 1983 Washington Redskins, by the way.
Houston Oilers.
The 1983 Washington Redskins. How many rushing attempts would you guess that they had as a team?
Oh, it's ridiculous, I'm sure. They probably threw the ball 12 times all season.
Let's take a guess. How many rushing attempts did the 1983 Washington Redskins have?
Declan, you want to guess?
400? Like, is it a lot?
It's more than that.
Oh, well, it's got to be. It's a ton, I'm sure. That's all they probably
700.
Do.
700.
It's 629.
Oh, my God.
The Washington Redskins ran the ball 629 times in 1983.
Good Lord.
I'm with Randy. I think you got to throw it back even. You think Mike Zimmer's old school, Gary Kubiak?
Tell me about the 61 Packers.
Even more old school. 629 rushing. All right, well, that was Randy's off-season blueprints examples for the Minnesota Vikings.
I really wanted Randy to call up and just call for heads.
Well, maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
The run and shoot.
Dex, are you ready for your spotlight here? I think if you can bring some modern quarterback examples
absolutely
to the table.
Football.
Great.
Joe Namath, Alabama. Let's start there.
Call it my own.
Joe Montana, Notre Dame.
Man, all these people that are ripping Mac Jones, and we'll do a film review on Mac Jones at some point here, too. Because, well, Alabama quarterbacks never pan out. Huh. Joe Namath.
Yeah, Joe
okay
Namath. Yeah.
Joe Namath panned out.
Same with your
60
school
years ago. Notre Dame.
Joe Montana.
Ian Book. Actually,
Joe Theismann.
Our guy Sage Rosenfels, he actually worked with Ian Book last offseason. So we can get our guy back on and talk about Ian Book. Vikings third round draft pick quarterback, maybe. So Dex reviews. He reviewed a bidet a couple weeks ago.
I did.
He has reviewed, was it Zach Wilson from BYU?
My man.
And now Dex reviews Kyle Trask, quarterback prospect from Florida. Let's start out with, we'll put the rewind sort of framework
okay
on this.
Okay.
Your favorite thing about Kyle Trask?
Well, he's a prolific quarterback. Like, this dude leads all of college football in like every major statistic. He's put up humongous numbers. I love that. I know that can be inflated because the college game's a lot different than the NFL game. but he was first in college football in yards, first in touchdowns. I know originally it looked like he was going to be a Heisman favorite. Apparently the odds have sunken on that, I think, after maybe Justin Fields' big performance and Mac Jones also having a big year. However, this dude can make a lot of big-time throws. Obviously, Florida has produced some decent quarterbacks before, too, in college ranks.
Decent college quarterbacks.
In college ranks.
I don't need Tim Tebow running around in the Vikings uniform here. Or who was the other guy? Was Rex Grossman a Florida quarterback?
He might have been.
Yep, he was.
I think Cam Newton was technically a Florida quarterback before he transferred to Auburn, right?
Danny Werfel. Remember that guy?
There you go.
Hell yeah.
But he's prolific, and I believe the game that I watched with him specifically was the UK game, against Kentucky. Yeah, the University of Kentucky was the game that I watched when I saw Kyle Trask. The positives that I took away from him was that he can look off wide receivers. Okay, so he's not afraid to look them off. And and so the eyes are not locked in all the time. He's not afraid to stay in the pocket. Now, I wouldn't say he's mobile. So that's a potential issue because we've been looking for the mobile quarterback and the quarterback with awareness.
Is he like Tom Brady lack of mobility or Kirk Cousins lack of mobility?
Probably the latter. Probably more in the Kirky boy.
Can he shuffle in the pocket to blindside pressure?
Yeah, I think he could. I think he has the potential to do that. I think he
does.
That's
a start.
Mm-hmm. So he's not afraid to stay in the pocket. Quick release. Accuracy, it's looked all right. I mean, as a whole, he's completed 68% of his passes. But some scouts that I have talked to have said there might be some questions with his accuracy at the NFL level. Because I do my research here.
There is an article on PFF.com that says why Florida's Kyle Trask is not an elite SEC quarterback.
Ooh, yikes. PFF coming in hot there. He does have a great tight end target in Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts might be one of the best targets for the NFL draft in the tight end ranks.
Yeah,
Kyle Pitts
good.
Is insanely good.
Yep.
They hooked up for a lot of big catches. I would say Pitts, it might be a security blanket, so maybe you need a tight end security blanket like Irv Smith and Tyler Conklin if you were a Kyle Trask coming to the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, what was your least favorite thing about Kyle Trask when you watched him against Kentucky?
So I would say the lack of mobility, not the best deep ball. There were a couple shots that weren't even close to being on target. I personally liked his footwork. Experts didn't like his footwork.
Okay.
So I think that's also very important.
I weigh those opinions equally, by the way. Experts and Declan watching the Kentucky film.
So the what I asked an expert about, and this is what he was quoted, he told me this. He said, lack of mobility, lack of a howitzer. Love the word howitzer in a quarterback.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Howitzer.
That's a bad
ball, baby.
That's a bad combination right there, though. I want one of them.
His mechanics are improving, but still can get shoddy, which plays down his accuracy.
Now people will say, well, Aaron Rodgers had to have his mechanics overhauled. But for every Aaron Rodgers, there's probably like 100 other guys that have bad mechanics and are now insurance salesmen.
And you're not going to have Kyle Trask sit for 3 years either, probably. And that's the other thing.
Well, Zim would love to, actually.
And the final two.
Just like a quarterback never to play.
Knocks on him is his decision-making has improved this year, but he still has to understand his limitations and not try to make throws that he can't. That'll be a big issue in the NFL if not corrected.
According to Pro Football Focus, in terms of red flags, there are a lot of red flags within Kyle Trask's game. Most of his 2020 production has stemmed from scheme, play calling, and a slew of playmakers at his disposal. So they're basically saying, yeah, it's coaching. Like pretty much any quarterback could step in there at Florida with a bunch of 4- and 5-star recruits and do what he's doing. So what was your main takeaway watching Kyle Trask? How would you feel if the Vikings drafted him in the first or second round in 2020?
I would have big time trepidation if it's a first round pick, especially if it's at 14 where the Vikings are. I think for most mocks, it looks like he's going to be a day two quarterback, maybe in the second round, but he's going to be probably a project quarterback.
See, so that's good stuff. Thank you for the review.
Mike, and one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
The comp, I think best case scenario turns into Matt Ryan. I think that's the best case scenario.
Well, that's pretty
scenario.
Damn good if that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but that's best case.
That's best case.
Yeah.
I think more likely, he's probably Colt McCoy.
So he's probably realistically a third round pick, right?
I think he's a day two. I think he's, second to third round pick, day two guy who's a project. I mean, Kirk Cousins was a day three pick, wasn't he? He was a fifth round pick.
Third round pick.
The wild card is, Joe Burrow came out of nowhere and put up this insanely prolific year at LSU. Wild card is Joe Burrow would be insanely, that would be the wild card, but I think best case he turns into Matt Ryan.
See, the funny thing is, and we can maybe we do some research on this, you look at a lot of the star quarterbacks now, Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. Now, Russell Wilson, I think the biggest concern was just height and size. because there's just not that many guys under 6 feet that are successful quarterbacks. It's like Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, and then maybe Kyler Murray if he, you know, pans out. So that was legitimate. Tom Brady was like, well, he can't move. He's got a pretty good arm. He's not really athletic at all. So, like, all these knocks on guys, I want to know, what is the thing that they miss? Like, how in retrospect, it's egregious that a guy like Tom Brady and his leadership and his drive and obsession, right?
Yep.
So, like, the only way, after all of that that Declan just went through and talking to some smart people behind the scenes, if Kyle Trask isn't that mobile and Kyle Trask's arm isn't a howitzer, which is an amazing way football. To phrase it, right? But if there was a way for someone to say, however, he is obsessed with football, he's a great leader, and he will overcome some of these physical deficiencies, that's the only way I would look to take a gamble. Otherwise, like, for me, if the Vikings are going to take a flyer, let's say even second, third round, mobility is going to be super important. I want a guy that can overcome a bad offensive line. Like Jalen Hurts in the second round by the Eagles. That was a really good pick.
Yeah.
And it's panning out, even though Nate Sudfeld is more trustworthy late in games.
Kirk was fourth round, by the way.
Okay,
fourth round, third round, fourth round.
Okay.
So the problem, though, now is with a guy like Trask or Brady, too, is I think that the movement in the league itself has shifted even more towards looking down on a guy like Brady, who you don't know about, but who clearly is not athletic and can't move. Now, his ability to sense pressure was outstanding, but that's an intangible that you probably can't see immediately. Yeah. So I would say that if I'm going to take a chance on a quarterback, it's probably going to be at least a quarterback that I think has the potential to move.
Yes.
So like if Kyle Trask doesn't have a super strong arm and he really can't move well, I'm probably going to drop him to a day three guy personally.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in this league now, if I play him and he can't move and his arm's okay,
right,
what do I got?
Like basically all of these people who say, well, but look at how many quarterbacks who are mobile have won Super Bowls. It's like a small handful. You almost have to take everything that happened in the first 45 Super Bowls and years and put it in a different category. And then look at like the last 5 to 10 years and all these guys, whether it's like Andrew Luck's mobility, he never won a Super Bowl, but like Andrew Luck, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, the fact that half the quarterbacks in the NFL can now just like escape pressure means that you better be really, really good in all the other areas if you can't do that. And mm-hmm. that's why we're also so harsh on Kirk. It's like, well, he's already starting behind the eight ball because most of his competitors are more mobile than he is. And so he's got to be more accurate, which he is, better leader, question marks, et cetera, et cetera. So good rundown there on
who's
on
next?
Kyle Trask.
Yeah, who is next?
Let's do Mac Jones.
Mac Jones? All right.
Let's do Mac Jones.
Mac Jones.
Call your sources, Declan.
I think you should find
Jones,
a couple games.
Country singer extraordinaire and a quarterback.
Talk to your scouts. Talk to your PFF people.
I can do that.
See what they say behind the scenes.
Yeah, I got sources.
And then we'll maybe pick out another bidet between those two for you to.
So how do we rank the top three QBs in the draft right now? Lawrence.
I think Wilson is second. I think
that's what I'm curious about.
Second.
But if Fields comes back in the national championship and plays a great game, and he was so damn good against Clemson, he'll probably jump back to second, I would think.
Yeah. Maybe. I think those are the top three, however the number two and number three shake out. Then the big question is, who's the fourth best quarterback? Some people say it's Mac Jones.
Yeah.
In fact, I think our guy Mel Kiper had, I want to say Mac Jones was fourth or fifth on his
board. I like what I saw from Mac Jones.
And I think Tankathon had him going in about 17th, 18th overall.
Oh, that is interesting.
Interesting. Well, if you make that draft pick, it's a little bit like the Packers. Like, if you're in a win-now window and you're pushing forward, why would you waste a resource? And people are going to say, well, turned out well. The Packers are 13-3. Imagine how much better they would be if they had taken like Justin Jefferson or like traded up to take a stud wide
percentage
receiver.
Percentage chance right now, in your guys' opinion, of what the percentage is that the Vikings would take a quarterback in the first round right now.
So this is just what the Vikings would do.
Yeah,
not
so
what we would do. Right?
So what is yes, exactly right. What do you think they will do percentage wise?
I think there's a 3-5% chance they take a quarterback in the first round.
I would say 15, and I know that's still very, very bullish.
I think it's 1% right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that the GM and head coach are going to lay out a plan for the people that own this team that we are very close. We're going to get guys back. Mm-hmm. And they are going to continue to say, right or wrong, we've got our guy.
Totally agree. And they're going to look at the second half of the season and say, listen, something clicked with Kirk. We can keep that. Let's keep the system intact. We'll just put Clint Kubiak in as the coordinator, like how whatever that looks like.
I hate that same thought, system. But I think you might be right.
Run it back again. And then with the first round pick, we're going to get an offensive lineman. And then with the third round pick, we're going to get an interior defensive line. Three technique.
This is where Zim reaches across the table and strangles Rick and says, don't you mean we're going to get a three technique? Yeah, that's what I meant. Three technique.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to track down our friend Patrick Ricey here. See what he's up to.
Football.
All right.
All right. Patrick Ricey. We wrap with Ricey Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the show. And Mike Zimmer, in the biggest shocking news we can remember in recent Vikings history, has decided to not renew the contract of special teams coordinator Marwin Maloof, Patrick.
I missed that announcement. I'm glad I'm sitting down. I'm shocked. I am shocked that it's Marvin's fault that Dan Bailey couldn't make kicks and we couldn't catch a punt. I thought maybe the tackling of the Lions might get him off hook on the hook on the punt return area, but I guess not. So
I think Patrick, the long kickoff return to start the second half put the final nail in his coffin. I think another, 40-yard return? I think Zim said, okay, I've seen enough now.
I was telling Judd this the other day, Phil. I've always considered the coordinator title the greatest invention in the history of head coaches, right? Offensive and defensive. And then somebody about 10 years ago was such a genius after he had screwed up special teams. He said, I'm going to give one of those guys a coordinator title, too,
yeah.
So I can blame them for all our screw-ups on the special team. So now we have a special teams coordinator that we can fire when things are bad.
Also, right? I feel like coordinator, in terms of, like, job descriptions, I feel like coordinator is a rare one outside of football. Like, you see it once in a while, you know, in certain lines of work, but coordinator is a very high-level position in the NFL. I mean, it's a step below a head coach. And I feel like we should use it more outside of football in our everyday jobs.
It's code for fall guy.
It really is.
Basically, yeah, like, you're my fall guy.
Fall guy. It's, but here's the deal. Okay, a defensive coach, if you're the defensive coordinator, you should be able to tell defensive backs, linebackers, and linemen, hey, tackle that guy when you're running. We want to tackle those guys before they get too far down the field, right? But you got a special in offensive, you know, okay, well, we want to advance the ball. That's what we're going to try to do here. But special teams coordinator, kicking and returning have nothing to do with each other, right?
Yes.
So why do we have – why? You know, how can that guy take the fall both for punt returns and kickoffs? They have nothing to do with each other. You cannot be an expert at both those.
It's a great
deals,
point. It would be like in hockey if you've got, all right, we've got, so Bob over here is going to be the goalie coach, and he's going to oversee power play.
Power play, yeah, right, it is. They've got nothing to do with each other. Dan Bailey and the idiot kid who kept dropping punts, Osborne, have nothing to do with each other, right?
True.
In Zim's mind, they sure as hell did.
Oh, Zim. Zim's idea of special teams would be, let's never have them.
Yes. It's like quarterbacks.
In fact, he would like to make every offense start every possession on their own 8 so he could get a defensive advantage and blame the offensive coach if they didn't score enough points, right?
Yep. So
I don't know. This is his. I think he's on. I think he's on double. I mean, it's not a bold statement, but he gets fired if they don't make the playoffs next year.
Yeah. So that was my question. So they're probably going to run it all back with Spielman and Zimmer and Cousins. Like Cousins played well enough in the second half. So what do you think this team is capable of? Like, let's say they draft an offensive lineman in the first round and they clear some cap room and they get a bunch of injured guys back. Like, could they bounce back and compete for a Super Bowl next year?
Well, they got I still think they're better, even though the Bears beat them in here and made the playoffs back then. They're better than the Bears and the Lions, right? So, you know, they can be. They were one game from being in the playoffs this year, as bad as their defense was.
And they should have been in, yeah.
So they can bounce back. But, I mean, they have offensive weapons. Here's what we're going to find out, though. Are they going to go to a guy like Riley Reiff, who they just beat the hell out of, and he had a good year, and beat the hell out of him again? Or are they going to have to go get a left tackle again?
They're going to try.
I don't want to move that Cleveland kid to left tackle. Keep him where he is. Right guard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get him out there on left tackle and his footwork and stuff might end up being exposed. So, I don't want to have to redo you got to find one guard for the offensive line. The rest of them, you got a chance to survive. But don't go cheap on the offensive line again, I would say. So hey, that would be my advice.
Hey, Pat. So Zim today is referencing a topic that the North Stars would have been proud of, Louie especially. We're talking about man games missed now.
Man games missed.
You can't win if you miss all these men. What do you expect me to do?
Did he miss man games?
I think he called them games missed, but it's the same exact thing.
Man games.
Louis. It's man games, yes. Louie loved man games missed.
I used to give Louie hell. Remember Gary Sargent?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They went and got Gary Sargent, and he was a great player. But the kid from Bemidji, defenseman, but he got a bad back. And he didn't play for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And Louie counted all those man games, even though he was basically... He had back surgery and he couldn't play, but they were man games, man. We were big on man games. You know who got upset about not enough emphasis on man games? Herbie.
Wow.
Herbie, they came in and he got 51 points that year.
Yeah.
And Herbie, one reason he turned on Nanny and Sonmore is they didn't defend him enough because of all the injuries that they weren't putting in proper numbers of man games. Yeah, that's another hockey genius, by the way, whoever came up with man games. That was we don't hear it quite as much, do we?
I don't think we do now.
It
became a staple, but not now. Yeah.
So 8 days ago, when he did his Monday press conference after the Bears loss, he admitted, or that the Saints loss, he admitted he had a lousy defense, right?
Yes, right after that loss.
But today it was all excuses.
Well, he is basically saying, I didn't have my guys because of man games missed. I didn't have my guys.
Who does?
Well, and plus, they are his guys, really. He didn't develop them as well.
They didn't have their left tackle last week against the Bears. It's only the best, one of the two best left tackles.
I just thought that you would enjoy man games missed, Patrick.
Oh, I am. I do enjoy man games missed. I miss man games. Hockey's, that was a wild, wonderful time when late 80s, 90s, they were changing owners and Herbie was in and out and feuds were erupting. It was a great time for hockey. Go out to Met Center. It was easy to get in and out. It was great.
Pat, we got to ask you here. Your newspaper, the Star Tribune, wrote a speculative piece. I would actually consider it probably reckless speculation about the 2022 gubernatorial.
Reckless speculation.
Your thoughts on Matt Burke as a potential candidate for governor of the state of Minnesota?
Oh, I think he probably has got a good shot. Right, he could win too.
I think he would win. I think he would win.
Win than Pillowhead, that's for sure. I don't know what the dynamic will be politically in the state then if it's he's got a chance. I would think depends upon like if a guy like that Gazelka wants it with his contacts or something like that after fighting walls here for a couple of years.
I think my theory is there are so many. So if Matt Burke ran,
He would clearly get all the Republican support that there is, which is the minority in the state. But there are so many Vikings fans and centrists in Minnesota that unless he ran some sort of just terrible campaign, or I think he would win hands down if he decided to run.
No, I don't think he'd win hands down. I don't believe that. But I think he could win. You know, he could win. I think he could win. But it depends upon how irrational he is. If he's a complete psychopath on the right hand, on the right side, I don't know if he is or not. If he believes that Trump won the election, then I don't think he can win.
Well, but that's it, the key. If Burke runs and does not win, Pat, he just needs to call the people at the state and tell them, you got to recount those votes. You got to find me more votes. Okay. I mean,
why didn't the Vikings do that for one of those NFC title games? Listen, we need to find 42 points here. Okay. We need to find 42 points.
You find the 11th man in the huddle. Can you find me just 11th man?
Forget that. The Sounds game.
I don't think we're giving Zim enough credit for finally ending a season without a pathetic performance. You know, that they actually won their last, they didn't get blown out in their last game.
Momentum.
That's a great column right there. Take great heart in that performance.
He won the last game in 2014. So his first year, and then five and a year, bro, they'd urinated on themselves. And then, this time they beat the mighty Lions, although they probably played as poorly against the Lions as they did when they got blown out by real teams.
But yeah,
God bless the Lions.
It was a nice win for Coach Zimmer to make his excuses. Yeah. I'm really amazed.
I think we lost Pat.
I've been so loyal to him, aren't you?
Hold on, we lost you there. Can you repeat that?
I am shocked that they've been so loyal to him, the Wolves, because they were firing coaches left and right when they first got here. I'm amazed.
They like Rick a lot, though, and Rick definitely hired Mike, and so I don't know. I'm not shocked.
It also hasn't been a train wreck. I mean, their worst seasons are still 7-9.
Well, I think that Saints game saved him last year, don't you?
Yes, for sure.
When they beat the Saints.
Big time. Otherwise, he might have.
But, you know, I still think, I guess Spielman's to blame. I'd still like to know whose decision it was to sign Cousins.
It was Rick's.
Rick, for sure. I mean, Mike.
Yeah. I think Mike was like, okay.
But I got to think the Wolves wanted him to do it.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. But Rick sold the Wilfs, I'm sure, on, you know, I'm finally going to get my quarterback. This guy will come in and be great. And I bet Zim said, whatever, it's a quarterback. I hate them all. Eeyore of quarterback gurus.
That's probably correct. Yeah. So the hockey boys hit the ice. We start playing here in about 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. What, Dex 14th, I think, is first game?
Yeah. About 9 days from now, 10 days from now.
A lot of West Coast games, Patrick. Staying up late.
Oh, it's going to be interesting, man. The back to backs, two game series. It's like college hockey, man. It's weird. You're going to have a lot of splits, don't you? We're going to be like hockey. If we can just get 3 points out of the week.
Do you know what
I like it?
We need, Patrick, total goal series. Bring them back.
Oh, hey, that's a good idea.
Go old school. Go total goal series.
That puts a little pressure on you. Herbie's greatest triumph ever. They got beat by Notre Dame back when Notre Dame was in the old WCHA. They got beat by Notre Dame like by 5 on Friday night, and then they beat them 9-2 on Saturday. And Herbie That was a bigger upset than Lake Placid right there.
Pat, we got to run. We will talk to you again tomorrow, sir.
See you, Royce.
All right, gentlemen.
All right, goodbye. That is Rapping with Royce. You can also find Royce Unchained every single Monday wherever you find podcasts. ScoreNorth.com is always a great hub for everything we do. The four main shows we produce are Purple Daily, Mackie and Judd, Royce Unchained, and The Scoop with Doogie. Judd's hockey show lives also on a feed you can find, or you can just listen within the Mackie and Judd feed. So. All right. Speaking of Purple Daily, we got to bounce to talk some Vikings here. So check us out. Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com and YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast and YouTube.com/ScoreNorth MN. See you guys tomorrow on Mackie and Judd for Write That Down.